Good morning, everyone. Let me just give you a quick update as we continue to open our church to in-person services. A reminder that if you know people who don't have access to technology or the internet, that they can call the office between 9 and 3 p.m. on Wednesday and register over the phone. Marley will take their information and enter them in. And then for the rest of us, registration opens every Thursday at 9 a.m., and it's open until it fills. So we can take about 100 in our worship center. We can take 30 kids in River Kids. So we look forward to welcoming you back. It's the thing that we all need in our life. In fact, you could argue that it's a necessary ingredient. It's probably one of the things that has been a lifeline for you in these last 4 months. It's one of those things that's in our when it's in our life and it's good, it's really good. It just adds more joy to our life. It gives us a sense of contentment. And on the flip side, it's one of those things that when it's bad, it really is bad. And when it's really bad, sometimes it can create some of the most painful experiences that we might ever have in our lifetime. Also, it's one of the things that God uses to bless our life. It's the vessel that He uses to pour grace into our lives. And yet, it's one of the things that we very often don't even think about as something that's spiritual. Finally, science says it's one of these things that when we have it in our life, our minds are sharper, our bodies are healthier, and it improves our sleep. No, it's not that. The thing is, friendship. Friendship. Friendship is one of those things that God uses to bless our life. And today, as we continue through our journey of the life of David, and we find ourselves in 1 Samuel chapters 18 to 20, three chapters that are completely focused on this issue of friendship. And today we're going to look at chapter 20, and in order for us to really appreciate the value of friendship that we see between David and Jonathan, I want us to kind of be reminded about what's taken place to the story to this point, because I really want us to feel the weight of the challenges that are at play in their life that have the potential to pull their friendship completely apart. Saul is currently the king. David has been chosen as his replacement. David is now working for Saul and is quietly making his way up through the ranks. He's getting noticed by everyone. He's getting a lot of press and people are talking about him. He's making more headlines than Saul. More people are talking about him than are talking about Saul, and Saul is incredibly insecure, so you can imagine that this is a bad combo. Just maybe in your work world, you've got a senior person in your office, older, and some younger person kind of coming up through the ranks that's getting all the attention, and jealousy forms. That's what's going on in this story. Meanwhile, David has developed a friendship with Saul's son, Jonathan, but it's no ordinary friendship. Back in chapter 18, verses 1 to 4, it tells us that David and Jonathan have made a covenant together. Now, this is important, and that may be kind of a foreign concept to us. A covenant is just, it's an agreement that you make with each other, but you do it in the presence of God. So it takes on an extra layer of significance. And this whole idea of making a covenant together, it came with an ancient ceremony that we could first read about back in Genesis chapter 16. It goes like this. It's a little bit different. Two people kind of make an agreement. You agree to make it in the presence of God. You take three or four animals. You kill them. You cut them in half. And you create a little pathway. And you put half of the animal on either side of the pathway. And then, once you've kind of made your formal agreement, both parties walk through the pieces. You walk in between the pieces of these dead animals as your way of saying, I give myself fully and completely to this agreement. One more important detail. If you fail to keep your end of the agreement, if you come up short on your end of the bargain, the person who breaks the covenant ends up like the pieces. You're supposed to be killed. This was a super serious way of communicating to the other person that you're serious about the commitment you're making to them. It's also a helpful solution if you have too many cats in your house, but that's another story. So David is the king. He's working for the current king. The current king hates him and wants to kill him. David is now also best friends with that king's son, and they've covenanted themselves together till death do us part. So do you feel the weight of the complexity of this story? Well, let's pick up here, 1 Samuel chapter 20. Verses 1 to 17. This is going to be a little bit long. I want to read through it and I want to unpack it a little bit, but I want you to see the beauty of a friendship in the midst of one of the most difficult seasons of life. 1 Samuel chapter 20, starting at verse 1. Then David fled from Naoth to Ramah and went to Jonathan and asked, "What have I done? What is my crime? How have I wronged your father that he's trying to take my life?" "Never," Jonathan replied. "You are not going to die. Look, my father doesn't do anything great or small without confiding in me. Why would he hide it from me? It is not so." But David took an oath and said, "Your father knows very well that I found favor in your eyes. And he has said to himself, 'Jonathan must not know this or he will be grieved.' Yet as surely as the Lord lives, as you live, there is only one step between me and death." And Jonathan said to David, "Whatever you want me to do, I'll do it for you." Do you sense the intensity here? David is afraid. He knows Saul is trying to kill him. He's already tried. He's terrified, and he risks his life by returning back to the place where Saul lived to see Jonathan, to work this out. And he's not so sure that Jonathan appreciates all the dynamics. He's not sure that he isn't blinded a little bit by his love for his own father. So he's pushing him and saying, "Are you in this with me?" Look at verse 6, verse 5. So David said, "Look, tomorrow is the new moon festival, and I'm supposed to dine with the king, and let me go and hide in a field until evening of the day after tomorrow. If your father misses me at all, tell him, 'David earnestly asked my permission to hurry to Bethlehem, his hometown, because an annual sacrifice is being made there for his whole clan.'" Yes, this is a lie. Verse 7, "If Saul says, 'Very well,' or 'Who cares?' then your servant is safe. But if he loses his temper, and you can be sure that he is determined to harm me. As for you, Jonathan, show kindness to your servant, to David, for you have brought him into a covenant." This is the thing we talked about earlier. "Before the Lord, if I am guilty, then kill me yourself. Why hand me over to your father?" What David is saying is here, hey, we made a covenant together. And the deal with the covenant is whoever breaks it, they have to die. David is saying this, if you're going to break your covenant, I'm not going to kill you. I would rather you kill me. Because I cannot go through this life knowing that my best friend betrayed me. Verse 9, "Never," Jonathan said. "If I had the least inkling that my father was determined to harm you, wouldn't I tell you?" And David asks, "Who will tell me if your father answers you harshly?" "Come, Jonathan, let's go out into the field. Let's go outside. We can't talk about this indoors. There's too many ears." Then Jonathan said to David, "By the Lord, the God of Israel, I will surely sound out my father by this time, the day after tomorrow. If he is favorably disposed towards you, will I not send you word and let you know? But if my father is inclined to harm you, may the Lord deal with me, be it ever so severely, if I do not let you know and send you away safely. May the Lord be with you as he has been with my father. But show me unfailing kindness, like that the Lord has long as I live, so that I may not be killed. And do not ever cut off your kindness from my family, not even when the Lord has cut off everyone from David's enemies from the face of the earth." This passage started with David pushing Jonathan, saying, "Are you going to be faithful to me?" And now Jonathan is pushing back to David, "You have to be faithful to me." Look at verses 16 and 17. So Jonathan made a covenant with the house of David, saying, "May the Lord call David's enemies to account.
And Jonathan had David reaffirm his oath out of love for him, because he loved him as he loved himself. Look, this is an intense story. The whole chapter starts with this argument, this fear that David has that Saul is going to kill him, and Jonathan isn't doing enough to stop it. In the middle, they kind of reaffirm it, and they make a covenant together, and they promise to be faithful to each other through the midst of this. And the chapter ends with the two of them going forward headlong into this messy conflict, but with 100% certainty that they have the gift of friendship as they make their way through this mess. And some of you know how this feels because you've had this experience in your own life. You've gone through difficulties and you've gone through seasons, but you had a gift all along the way in the form of a friend. Someone that was there for you no matter what. You have been with, they've been with you in your highest moments, celebrating with you, and they've been with you in your worst moments, right there with you without judgment, but with mercy and with grace. They're the person who knows you the best, and they still love you the most. And if you were to imagine your life without these people, it would feel tragically poorer. And some of you today, even maybe as we were going through the story, we're thinking about some friendships that you might have that are under great pressure, or maybe you feel like they're being pulled apart by life's circumstances or situations. And you're kind of in that same season of fighting to keep the friendship alive. But this friendship, or this story, calls us to think about friendship a little bit differently than maybe we do now. Because for David and Jonathan, their friendship is spiritual. It has a very deeply spiritual nature. I don't think we often think of friendships as spiritual. And we don't often think about friendships as one of the main ways that God gives grace to our lives. In fact, if I ask you, how is it that you grow spiritually? Most of you would say, well, I read my Bible and I pray, I worship, I practice solitude. But very few of you would say, I have friends in my life and God uses them to shape and grow my faith. And if I asked you, if you thought that God used you to be a blessing to someone's life in that way, probably you wouldn't naturally say yes. And yet, here's what I'm guessing. If you stop right now and look back over the course of your life and think about ways that God has come alongside you, that God has spoken truth and peace and hope and love into your life, I'm guessing a lot of those stories involve a good friend who was there for you through thick and thin. So today I want us to think about what it means to be friends, what it means for our friendships to have a spiritual nature to them. And I just want to point out a few things that come up in this passage that are kind of the marks of spiritual friendship. And as we go through, maybe it'll help you think a little bit more intentionally about the kind of friend that you are. Maybe it'll give you some help if you have some friendships that mean a lot to you, but they're in a difficult season right now. So let me just talk about a few of these quickly. The first of this, we see in the story that the friends give the gift of honesty to each other. I mean, this is an intense story. David and Jonathan go right after it at the very beginning. They're challenging each other. They're speaking openly and honestly about the challenge of their circumstances and the way that life is kind of pulling them apart. They're being really, really honest with each other. You know, in life, it's easy just to be superficial and to never really go beyond the surface of things. I ask you how you're doing. You say, oh, good, good, good. You ask me how I'm doing, and in my mind, I stop and I say, well, I've lost my job. I'm having a midlife crisis. My kids are all driving me crazy, stuck home with me. My wife went out for milk 3 days ago and has not come back. But I'm going to respond to you, I'm doing good, right? There's a lot of that that goes on in life. And here David and Jonathan both share their fears, and they're open about all of what's going on with each other. Now, I realize that doesn't come easily, and I realize that maybe not every friendship's going to get to that level. But learning to share honestly is one of those life skills that allows friendships, relationships with siblings, relationships with our kids, relationships with our spouse, to grow. And it gives us the ability to talk honestly so that our relationship can be really something significant. Now, when I meet people who have relationship problems, whether it's a marriage or with friends or maybe even a life group that has gotten stuck or has stalled out, it's usually because they've stopped communicating and they stopped being honest with each other. Relationships go through seasons. They start out great, everything is going well, and then you can kind of plateau for a little bit, and you get stuck in a rut, you get comfortable, you're in a routine. And or maybe life gets difficult, it's challenging, you're busy, and you start to develop unhealthy patterns of communication. But at the heart of it is we stop talking, we stop communicating, and we stop being honest with each other. And in order for there to be a breakthrough, someone needs to say what's really going on. Someone needs to be the one kindly and gently who says, we've got a problem here, we need to figure this out. And that's the gift that Jonathan and David gave to each other entire, right from chapter 18 through to the end of chapter 20. They're honest with each other and they figure it out. As you think about the friends that you have had in your life that have been a gift to you for the last 10, 20, 30 years maybe, I'm guessing there's a significant amount of honest back and forth that has gone on through the years to keep that relationship strong and significant. The first thing, they give the gift of honesty. The second is they give the gift of sacrifice to each other. At the heart of true friendship is the willingness to sacrifice for the other person. In this passage, both Jonathan and David take huge risks in order to preserve their friendship. David comes into Saul's hometown just to fight for the friendship. Jonathan takes the risk of his dad discovering that he's helping David out just for the sake of their friendship. The nature of any healthy relationship requires each of us to give, to surrender, to keep quiet, and to let the other person have their way sometimes. In the New Testament, when Paul is giving advice about marriage, he uses the language of mutual submission. And whenever I introduce that topic to couples that are wanting to get married, it usually causes someone to get fired up because the whole idea of submission sounds like such a terrible idea. But it's actually a powerful, liberating concept. Mutual submission means that each party has to sacrifice and surrender our ways, our preferences, our wants, and our plans so the other person can have their way, their preference, their movie choice. It's such a simple idea, but ultimately it's the secret to a healthy relationship. Equal sacrifice between each party. It's actually the way that we show that we love somebody, that we're willing to set our wishes and wants aside for them. And if you've had friendships or relationships that have fallen apart or keep falling apart, maybe it's because there's no sacrifice, there's no surrender, there's no willingness to be inconvenienced. And if one person always has to have their way in a friendship, the friendship won't last. And if the friendship does last, it will carry with it a healthy, unhealthy amount of resentment. The gift of friendship, we see honesty and we see sacrifice. The third, unconditional love. Jonathan and David give the gift of unconditional love. Look, this was a tough story. They could have called it quits. They should have said, or they could have said, this requires too much commitment. Let's just go our separate ways. But they were committed to each other through thick and thin. There's a loyalty here that's unbreakable. This might be one of the greatest gifts you can ever give another person in life, is to love them without condition, no matter what. Now, this love, this unconditional love, gets tested all the time in small ways throughout our lives. But when it really matters is when it gets tested in significant ways, when life gets messy, when there's a huge disaster in the relationship, when there's been a huge breach of the contract, of the covenant, of the friendship. When we do something that smashes our lives to pieces, our reputation to pieces, that injures the people around us. And the question becomes in that moment, is this love significant enough to continue to be strong in the midst of this mess? They were friends with me until I got divorced, and then I never heard from them again. They were friends with me until my son came out of the closet, and then I never heard from them again. They were friends with me until they found out that I struggled with an addiction, and then I never really heard from them again. That is love with conditions. And you know, you can love someone and not always agree with their life, with what they believe, or with some of the choices that they made. I mean, we live in this crazy day of cancel culture. And cancel culture has no room in the church. Cancel culture is when someone does something wrong, usually really bad, and then when we find out about it, we cancel them. We stop following them online, we stop hanging out with them, we stop referring to them, and we treat them like they never existed. And it's hard to believe that in a culture that claims to be so tolerant, that cancel culture could still exist. Friends, as the people of God, there is no room for cancel culture attitude in the church. You may need to set some boundaries with someone. You may need to take a break in a friendship. But to treat someone like they no longer exist is not the gospel that you and I have experienced in Jesus Christ. As the people of God, we must know and feel in our bones the kind of unconditional love that God has extended to us. I love Paul's words in Romans, "For I am convinced that neither death nor life, angels nor demons, neither the present nor the future, nor any powers, neither height nor depth, nor anything else in all creation will be able to separate us from the love of God that is in Jesus Christ our Lord." Do you believe that? Do you believe that to be true? Or is there a brand or a version of Christianity that lingers in your heart where you still think, God will only love me if I'm good enough? God will only love me as long as I don't do this, this, or this. Think about this. Nothing you do, nothing that gets done to you, nothing that happens to you in this world can separate you from God's love. Which means, as recipients of this love, we also need to be practitioners of this love, sharing it with other people. The world has seen cancel culture love, which is, I will love you as long as, but as soon as you step out of the bounds, you're done with us. The woman caught in adultery, the woman at the well, the demoniac in the cemetery, Matthew the tax collector, had all been canceled by their culture. And Jesus walks up to each of them and says, "Would you like to follow me? Or would you like to be my friend?" If we want to be friends who can demonstrate God's undeserved kindness to others, we need to search our hearts and ask ourselves whether we really believe God has loved us with that kind of love. And when we realize that he has, we will be able to love others with that kind of unconditional love. Lastly, David and Jonathan see a friendship that gives the gift of grace. It's hard to imagine how David could have stayed alive without Jonathan's help. Last week when I talked about David and Goliath, I said if God's power had not been upon David that day, he would have been a stain on the grass in the valley of Elah. That it was God's power that preserved him in that story. In this story today that we're looking at, God's gift of Jonathan keeps David alive. It protects him. It protects the promise that God had made to David, his commitment to make David the next king. And Jonathan is the gift of grace that sustains that promise. David is going to be king, and God's going to help him. And how does he help him? He gives him a great friend. What if we saw our friends this way? What if your friendship is God's divine plan to be grace in someone else's life? Maybe even through their most difficult season of life, through illness, through depression, through divorce. What if we saw our friendships this way? As people that God has placed around us so we could have more grace, more of God's blessing in our life. God shows grace to David not just by forgiving his sins, he'll do lots of that, but through the gift of a friend.
As I close today, let me just change gears a little bit. I want us to think about a phrase that's found in Matthew's gospel. It's a label that gets applied to Jesus that's incredibly controversial. It splits the crowd. They aren't sure what to think of it. Is it a good term or is it a bad term? And the phrase is this: Jesus is the friend of sinners. He's the friend of sinners. Jesus is the one who knows everything about us, and he loves us still. Not only that, to go back to our language of the covenant that Jonathan and David made with each other, where they cut the pieces and they walk between them, and the one who breaks the covenant ends up dead. Jesus is the one who walks the path with us. He keeps his end of the covenant perfectly with us. We break our end of the agreement again and again and again, meaning that we are deserving of death. But Jesus instead takes our death upon himself, not to end the relationship, but to keep it alive. Jesus is our friend. And today, as we wrestle with what does it mean to be a friend in this day and age, what does it mean to be spiritual friends with our sisters and brothers in Christ, it starts with remembering that God came to us to be our friends. And he is the model of friendship that, as we wrestle with and we accept in our own lives, liberates us and sets us free to be that same kind of friend to the people that God has placed in our lives. Let me pray. God, we thank you that you have shown us. And you've not just shown us, we've experienced it in our own life, what it means to be set free, to be forgiven, to receive grace that we just did not deserve. God, may that just soak deep into our bones, and ultimately may it transform how we treat the people around us, whether it's our friends, whether it's our siblings, our parents, our spouse, our coworkers. God, may your grace define and shape how we live, that others would see your love at work in us. And God, as we do, we would know nothing more than your joy and love and peace in our lives. And we thank you for this in Christ's name. Amen.